Okay, hi everybody. We are in the Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries. It's on part two of this wonderful book, and we're beginning with program 29, page 459. We've been talking about how it's necessary for the disciple to have individual application and in order to achieve future realization. But how the individual will apply, that's also up to the individual, and the realization will come, and all of this to be accomplished in the crucible of experience. We've been going through very deep matters here, very practical as well, and something that we must continue to ponder. This type of program may give some of us a start in that direction, but more will be required of us, certainly. All right, let's see where we are here. Right. Okay, so the earlier experiences occurred normally. The man now stands holding the mind steady in the light. This is before he can really begin to build the Antikarana. He has some knowledge of meditation and also much devotion and also recognition, because he has been taught of the next step. And the knowledge of the process gradually becomes clearer. A growing soul contact is established along with the building of the Antikarana, even though sometimes it is said to bypass the soul. And occasional flashes of intuitive perception from the triad occur. It's not that all of these will occur for every single disciple. Much depends upon the ray. Just as when we studied the fusion formula, we realized that there were different types of results coming from that formula depending on the soul ray. With the first ray bringing in ray 2 effects, the second ray 3 effects, and the third ray 1 effects. A bit of a ring around a rosy there. Really worth studying in the late 300s of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. The goal towards which the average disciple has worked in the past has been soul contact, leading to what has been called hierarchical inclusion. So we can say that the one who is truly soul conscious is a member of the spiritual hierarchy. The reward of the disciple's efforts has been admittance into the ashram of some master for further training and further service, increased opportunity to serve the world, and also the taking of certain initiations. Okay, this is the reward of this type of effort. Okay. The goal towards which the higher disciples are working involves not only soul contact as its primary objective, for that has to some measure been attained and will increase until the fourth initiation, but the building of the bridge from the personality to the spiritual triad with consequent monadic realization. And the opening up of the initiates to the initiate, of the higher way or of the way to the higher evolution in its various branches with its different goals and objectives. And these are the these are eventually let's make sure that this is really working properly. It is. Eventually, this is eventually the way of higher evolution with its seven, or now nine, paths. So, monadic realization, the realization of being, and the opening up to the initiate of the way to the higher evolution. Or, and, you know, this may be different, a little different, or a little different from the way of higher evolution. There is a way to the way, in a way. Okay, in its various branches with its differing goals and objectives. The distinction, I said, not difference, and would have you note this, between the two ways can be seen in the following list of comparisons. So he's making a very fine distinction in calling a distinction other than a difference. So in the first, the treading of the normal path of initiation for the individual seeking soul contact is listed here on the left, and for the individual seeking triadal contact and eventually monadic realization, the list is on the right. So a desire and aspiration can lead us to the soul, but it takes the mind to project the triple thread. The first and first and second initiations are involved here. These are initiations of the threshold compared with the true initiations, which are the third and the fourth. And I suppose we could say that both involve the antikarana, though at the fourth initiation we can question its form. We might say at the fifth initiation it is retracted into the sun, a symbolic way of stating that Mercury and the sun are one. When we aspire towards the soul, universal love and intuition from the Buddhic plane can be the result. And when we project into the world of spiritual triad, universal will and mind, well, the atmic plane is certainly involved. Now, what is the plane of, you know, you oftentimes when we talk about universal, we do simply mean the domain of the solar logos. We don't mean the grand entirety of cosmos. We certainly can't even talk about the galaxy. Maybe in the master's archives there is information about that. DK seems to hint at that in the 1080s of Cosmic Fire. But the word universal, I think, will have a solar systemic meaning, and the atmic plane is a plane of will, but also a plane of mind. Okay, the way to the soul, well, what shall we call it? What has he called it? Soul contact and hierarchical inclusion. This has been the way trodden by many before these higher methods have been imparted, and admission, the reward is the admission into the ashram, increased opportunity to serve the world, and also the taking part in certain initiations. It looks here like, well, initiations of the threshold primarily, but of course admission into an ashram will offer further opportunity of the higher initiations. So in this way of the soul, it's called the path of light, and in the way of monadic realization, it's called the way of higher evolution, but this does not really begin at this time until the sixth initiation, that it has been lifted from the fifth initiation, even during the time DK was presenting his material. As we aspire towards the soul, we're looking for a point of contact with the soul, a mind held steady in the light of the soul, a method of blending higher mind and lower mind. And when I say higher mind, I don't necessarily mean the abstract mind of the triad. And the use here of the antikarana or bridge, as it really is, per se, is not part of the path to the soul. This is the path to the soul gives us an earlier method, an earlier type of contact. I think I'd like to bring that back if I can. No way of knowing for sure. Okay. On the path of the soul, we are interested in the plan. Now, the point is that the plan itself really is formulated on the atomic plane, but at least within the ashram, the plan is dealt with within the ashram. And on the way of higher evolution, we learn something of the purpose, and this is related to monadic apprehension. The purpose really is something that is organized or finds a kind of archetypal pattern on the monadic plane and in a still deeper sense on the logoic plane. Below that, we have the plan. In other words, when we're working from the atomic plane down, we have the plan to deal with. On the path towards the soul, we deal with the three layers of egoic petals. It's still the higher ego, we might say, encapsulated or sheathed in some way. The sword of the spirit is sheathed on the way of higher evolution, or at least the preliminary path to that way, and that preliminary path involves the third, fourth, and fifth initiations now. We have the spiritual triad in its three aspects, which is abstract mind, buddhi, and atma. On the path of the soul, it's the hierarchy we're interested in, and on the way of higher evolution, it is Shambhala, even though we may not be among those who are on the path of earth service and remain with Shambhala. But there is this interesting statement that at the third degree, Shambhala is consummated in the initiate. Now, you know, it's not the fullness of Shambhalic expression, but let's just say there is an achievement because there is relation to the monad, there is automatically some kind of relation to Shambhala. The way of the soul takes us into the master's ashram, and eventually, if we persist on the way of higher evolution, especially in one of its aspects, we come in relation to the council chamber within Shambhala. Now, it is said that Sanat Kumara has retained a number of his six-degree initiates at this time. They have registered their choice, but they have not moved on because things are so severe upon our planet that they have to remain. They have to remain with us in order to help the planet get through its crisis. Now, what are the seven paths? Well, are these the seven paths on the way of higher evolution? Well, we can say these are seven paths, and we can call them, in a sense, ray paths. And the seven paths on the way of higher evolution are, let's just say, not ray paths, though there are tendencies of the ray types to take certain of these seven paths, and now nine, which is not to say there are going to be, there are nine paths, there are nine initiations, but there are not nine rays. And some people, you know, out of the love of novelty and thinking that to extend is to deepen, have suggested that there are 12 rays. But if there are a lesser five, they are simply the result of a higher seven being the prototype. All right, so these are two columns which tell us something about the distinction between these two ways. Now, we really have to ponder on why the word difference is not used. Perhaps it's because they are so interrelated. We might say that these paths are so interrelated that DK does not use the word difference because they really are leading well, they're all part of one process. They are all part of one process. And they have distinct functions within the process. All right. In reality, you have here the two major approaches to God or to the divine whole. And it doesn't mean that, you know, the more love line approach necessarily stops and does not lead onto the greater way. Both merging at the time of the fifth initiation in the one way, which in itself combines all ways. And that's a very important point. Really, though, we might say that, the approach to Shambhala and this, the direct approach to the way of higher evolution does not really begin to be envisioned until the, with any accuracy anyway, until the revelation of the fifth initiation somewhat reveals it. And then there is the opportunity, and I think it takes a long time between the fifth and sixth initiation for the master to make his choice. Earlier, it seemed that the choice was made at the fifth degree, but now it seems the fifth degree is the beginning of a kind of opportunity to study these paths and the relationship, the seven or nine paths, cosmic paths, and the relationship of the initiate, higher initiate, to these paths. Forget not a statement which I have several times made, that the four minor rays must merge eventually into the third ray, and that all five must then finally merge into the second and the first rays. Okay, and this is interesting because it puts the first and second rays in the position of being synthetic rays, and I think when we look at the, it's here, this would be the diagram that we need. We would see that the first and second rays are represented by Uranus and Neptune, especially, and that there's emerging into the third ray of schemes of attribute. And then this third will merge in some way into the second or into the first. There are direct lines to the center of both. Of course, that's true of all the synthesizing planets. Forget not the statement I have, a statement which I have several times made, that the four minor rays much. Now, when is this? Because it doesn't necessarily occur at the fourth initiation, okay, into the third ray. Let's just say this does not necessarily occur at the fourth initiation because it is possible to destroy the causal body on any of the seven rays. But at a certain point, and even all the five must finally merge into the second and first rays, one begins to wonder, at least I do, I wonder whether this does not occur on the Lagoic plane eventually, where there are three great centers rather than seven, because we do have seven monadic types. And the idea that there are seven monadic types is scattered throughout the teaching. Sometimes we talk about a major three monadic types, but I think those are ultimate monadic types, and I think they relate to the Logoic plane and the liberated monad after the sixth initiation. Bear also in mind that all these rays or modes of being, now that's another great definition for a ray, are aspects or sub-rays of the second cosmic ray of love and of fire. Now, how he slips things in, you see. Why of fire? Does the great second ray contain, in a way, all the three fires which we study? And I would say, you know, probably it does. Sometimes we look at the great second ray of our solar logos and we realize that everything that we call electric fire, solar fire, fiber friction is somehow contained within that great second ray, even though it is cosmic solar fire. So let's say I'm going to, you know how I do, I like to capture things when they appear because it can be years before they appear again. And one can, you know, run out of illusory time. So this is, I'm going to make this quite big so I know what I'm doing when I come back to it at some point. And I'm going to say rays are modes of being and put that into the, alrighty, there we go. Put that into our AAB extracts, which I trust will be of value to people as we go along. Some people have been great compilationists. I think we know, a lot to a number of people, and I want to single out here Zach Rymill, who has made marvelous compilations on so many subjects and then offered them freely for people to use. We do have, of course, the Moria Federation Ageless Wisdom compilation section. So anyway, rays are modes of being, or what we might say even is modes through which being expresses itself. Modes through which being expresses itself. You know, being descends to manifest. We're told in those six trumpeted statements. How does being descend to manifest? I've worked out kind of a psychological, numerological method. I've talked about it in my infinitization book, but of course it's not the scientific understanding of how this really does occur. I believe that the process of being descending to manifest is through self-reflection, through a kind of self-sight or self-consciousness, ever more limited and thus ever more distinct in emanative function. But that's another matter, and one day I'll try to refine my thought on that and see if it holds water. I hope it holds some water. Okay, now, where are we? Okay, yes, we are here. Okay, I would like here also to point out some further relationships. You know well that upon the mental plane, the three aspects of mind, or the three focal points of mental perception and activity, are to be found. Three focal points of mental perception, three centers which generate a certain type of mental perception. Well, what can we call it? TYP. You know, there's the concrete mind, the loving mind, and the patterning mind. And perhaps we could use a word like patterning even with respect to the son of mind or the second aspect of mind. But let us see further how Master DK describes these things. He says, the lower or concrete mind, this expresses itself most completely through the fifth ray of concrete science. Sometimes he just calls it the ray of science or concrete knowledge, but here concrete science, reflecting the lower phase of the will aspect of divinity, as five is directly related to one, even in terms of soul transfer. So reflecting the lower phase of the will aspect of divinity and summarizing within itself all knowledge, as well as the egoic memory, which is found in the mental unit and maybe in the other permanent atoms, but probably, especially, in the member of the atomic triangle, ATR, Atlantean race. Oh, goodness. Atomic triangle. There it is. Atomic triangle, which has to do with mind. The lower concrete mind is related to the knowledge petals of the egoic lotus, and we remembered also to the head center, as we were studying a little earlier, and is capable of a pronounced soul illumination when the mind is held steady in the light, proving eventually to be the search light of the soul, and maybe in the lower worlds, seeing things from the soul perspective. It can be brought under control through the processes of concentration. This is a Leonian factor and a centralizing factor. Leo is a sign of centralization. It is transient in time and space because it will be pervaded by higher types of mind. It will be pervaded by higher types of mind. Through conscious creative work, it can be related to the monastic permanent atom or to the abstract mind. And conscious creative work. Now, what does he mean by that? And this is another way of describing the Antikorana. Okay, so let's just, you know, he's giving us a quite good definition here of the different types of mind. The lower concrete mind, this expresses itself most completely through the fifth ray of science, though the other rays can be part of that expression, but not as completely, perhaps, reflecting the lower phase of the will aspect of divinity. You know, the fifth ray souls transfer onto the first ray, we are told, and summarizing within itself all knowledge, as well as the egoic memory. Well, we might say it's an aspect of the third ray. The third ray is the ray of memory, but the fifth ray, particularly the ray of knowledge. This lower concrete mind is related to the knowledge petals of the egoic lotus, and is capable of pronounced soul illumination. I wonder, you know, of the major types of rays that condition the mind, I sometimes think that we can relate the fifth ray to the knowledge petals, the fourth ray to the love petals, and the first ray to the sacrifice petals, when considering them in terms of the usual mental rays. This lower concrete mind is related to the knowledge petals, okay, and is capable of pronounced soul illumination and the power to take initiation, which the fifth ray confers when there is sufficient light in the mind, proving eventually to be the search light of the soul. This implies the soul looking downward, I suppose, through the personality. This implies the soul looking downwards through the personality. In the etc., etc., it can be brought under control through processes of concentration, you know, so this is the task of conventional education. It is transient in time and space. You know, it's useful up to a point before it is pervaded by the other aspects of mind, making of the mind a unified field. So eventually, the mind will become a unified field. Concrete mind is pervaded by higher types of mind. Okay, then we have another type of mind, the son of mind, the contemplating soul. This is the soul itself governed by the second aspect of all the seven rays, a point which I would ask you seriously to register. You know, some people forget that the soul on the higher mental plane is always essentially qualified by the second ray of love, wisdom. So, well, let's see, the concrete mind is especially related to the fifth ray, and here it's saying that the son of mind, and we might call this, you know, thinking as a soul within the soul, thinking as a soul and within the soul, is related primarily to the second ray. It reflects the lower phase of the love aspect of divinity, because the higher phase is found in the triad and monad. I think we should put that. The higher phase is being found in the spiritual triad and monad, and summarizes in itself the results of all accumulated knowledge, which is wisdom. Once summarized, we might say, once summarized and uplifted and transmuted, and summarizes in itself all the results of all accumulated knowledge as quality, which is wisdom illuminated by the light of the intuition. So we have knowledge, wisdom, and intuition all coming together. Knowledge, so knowledge, wisdom, and intuition all come together, and really wisdom is sometimes called buddhi, and intuition is found on the plane of buddhi, so true wisdom is very much related to the intuition, though I suppose there is a kind of a mental type of wisdom which has to do with the abstract mind and with soul perspective. Another way of expressing this is to describe it as love availing itself of experience and knowledge. This is so good, because love is basically using experience and knowledge. And so this is really a kind of thinking within the heart, and the heart is the soul. So this type of mind is love, loving mind. Using all experience to more fully express love, wisdom. It expresses itself most fully through the love petals of its innate being. Through dedicated and devoted service, it brings the divine plan into activity in the three worlds of human accomplishment. So this type of mind loves the divine plan and labors lovingly for its manifestation. Sometimes the son of mind is not described as much as the concrete mind or the abstract mind, but in this particular case it is, and we have some very important ideas about what the son of mind really is. It is therefore related to the second aspect of the spiritual triad, and we would, you know, that is buddhi, right? Pure reason. There are a number of, you know, other descriptors there. The power to harmonize the intuition and so forth. And is brought into functioning activity through meditation. So, for the activation of this type of mind, as it demonstrates in the personality, we need meditation. It then controls and utilizes for its own spiritual ends the consecrated personality via the illumined mind, referred to above. So Son of Mind uses the illumined mind, the light-filled concrete mind. It is eternal in time and space. Well, what does the word eternal mean? The concrete mind is transient, and certainly this type of mind is longer lasting and is demonstrated by higher beings. This Son of Mind, Spark of Mind, let's see, Son of Mind is demonstrated by higher beings, but eternal, well, maybe as long as time and space last. As long as time and space last, which is not forever, except cyclically. So this is one of the better descriptions, I think, of the Son of Mind. So, you know, to really discriminate between these, the whole idea of love using knowledge and experience to express the divine plan, I think is very much an accurate portrayal here. Love using knowledge and experience to express the divine plan. And largely, well, everything on the higher mental plane is, in fact, mental. So we cannot look at any of the petals as not having the mental component. All the petals of the egoic lotus have the higher mental component, even though the most oriented towards knowledge per se are the knowledge petals. Well, one day we will live in that world of those energies, and they will become as intimate to us as now the personality energies are, the personality energies which we are attempting to use in such a way that we can outgrow them. And then we have the abstract mind, found upon the first subplane of the mental plane, just as the Son of Mind is found particularly upon the second subplane, but also upon the third, and the concrete mind is found upon the fourth subplane. So concrete mind on the fourth subplane, Son of Mind on the second and, well, let's ascend properly, third and second subplanes, and abstract mind on the first subplane. Oops, solar plexus. Subplane. Okay, all my abbreviations, you know, they sometimes save time if I can remember what they are. All right, well, here is the abstract mind, and this reveals itself most completely under the influence of the first ray of will or power, since the triad is an expression of the monad, and the monad, the spiritual triad, is an expression of the monad, and the monad represents the first aspect of divinity in man, no matter what may be the ray of the monad, just as the soul represents the second aspect of divinity in man, no matter what may be the ray of the soul. So this reveals itself most completely under the influence of the first ray of will of power, reflecting the higher aspect of the will of divinity, or the atmic principle. It summarizes in itself, when fully developed, the purpose of deity. So it's a mental understanding of the purpose, mental understanding of the purpose of deity, and thus becomes responsible for the emergence of the plan, or should we say, mentally outlining the plan, so that its major structure is clear. The abstract mind, this reveals itself most completely under the influence of the first ray of will or power, and sometimes we talk about will in a higher sense emanating from the cosmic mental plane, and especially from the abstract part of the cosmic mental plane. At least that's the way it is now in this solar system. Later, When there is further development of the solar logos, it may be different, and higher aspects on the cosmic planes may come into being. Let's just say the atmic part. But the atmic part is directly reflected in the abstract mind. They are both responsive to the number three and in a way to the number one. So the abstract mind, this reveals itself most completely under the influence of the first ray of will or power, reflecting the higher aspect of the will of divinity or of the atmic principles. It summarizes in itself, when fully developed, the purpose of deity, and thus becomes responsible for the emergence of the plan. Well, of course, it will know the plan as well, but the purpose of deity is something that is coming from a still higher level of the cosmic physical plane, though there has to be a broad understanding of purpose. That's just to say. Let's put it like this, the purpose of deity, giving a broad mental understanding of purpose. It energizes the will petals until such time as the eternal life of the soul is absorbed into that which is neither transient nor eternal, but which is endless, boundless, and unknown. The Tibetan puts things in here. He doesn't necessarily call our attention to them in a way that we must ponder, but if we're awake to the implications, we will ponder. Now, if we look at the let's see here, coming from the monastic permanent atom, we do have the sacrifice petals being stimulated. We see that, and also there is a line which connects directly to the center of the egoic lotus, the jewel in the lotus. So there is a very sort of first-ray sustaining power from the monastic permanent atom to the egoic lotus, and certain solar angels work particularly through the monastic permanent atom, we have been told, as those angels are enumerated in cosmic fire, maybe five different types. So it energizes the will petals until such a time as the eternal life of the soul, eternal, cyclically recurrent, maybe we can say, cyclically recurrent in time and space, is absorbed into that which is neither transient nor eternal, but is endless, boundless, and unknown. Well, this cannot be the absolute per se, but it can be the essence of the monad, which is, in essence, the absolute, okay. That which is endless, boundless, and unknown, the very essence of the monad, and the unknown God, God is unknown and unafraid. You know, we have these important points in the Dina 285, where God, the God that is described and unknown, unafraid, untouched, for a unchanged. Pure being is God, unknown, unafraid, untouched, for a unchanged. That is an amazing idea, and to my way of thinking, it is the infinity of all infinities in which everything that ever was, is, or could be, is in essence completely enacted, so all possibilities are forever fulfilled in it, and thus it can be always unchanged, because there is no possibility in it that is not already completely enacted. And then, of course, we might get into the question there of free will and determinism, but I think there's a way through that, even with such a deity, which we are. Okay, It energizes the will petals until such time as the eternal life of the soul, and you know, it's not just the body of the soul, the life of the soul, is absorbed into that which is neither transient nor eternal, but which is endless. It has to be the essence of the monad. Now, the essence of the monad is different from the entirety of the monad. The essence of the monad is still more fundamental than the entire expression of the monad, which involves matter of a certain degree, akashic matter of the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane. It is brought into conscious functioning through the building of the Antikarana. And there's, you know, as I say, there are various ways to build the Antikarana. The Tibetan has given us a very direct way, but in earlier days, the Antikarana was built, and I think it was with the ability to work on the second subplane of the mental plane and bridge towards the first. There is an ability in some thinkers to work on the second subplane of the mental plane and bridge in thought towards the first subplane. And thus, they can bring the abstract mind into conscious functioning, even if they do not have the method, the occult method, of building the rainbow bridge. Oh, let's remember. Okay, rainbow bridge. Sometimes I hope that I have made an abbreviation, but find that I have not. Okay, this radiant rainbow bridge unites the illumined personality, because we have to have a mind of light. We have to have a mind of light to build this bridge. Unites the illumined personality focused in the mind-body, motivated by the love of the soul, which has been infusing, okay, infusing the personality with the monad, or with the one life. The monad is the one life. There's only one monad, only one. We make distinctions concerning the emanated monad because of the type of matter in which it is focused and the depth of immersion it has achieved or worked its way out of, but there's really only one monad. So this radiant rainbow bridge unites the illumined personality focused in the mind-body, motivated by the love of the soul, the personality which is mentally illumined and motivated by the love of the soul, with the monad or the one life via the spiritual triad, and thus enables the divine manifesting Son of God to express the significance of the words, and enables the divine manifesting Son of God. So if it's divine, divine is a word of the monad, whereas spiritual relates to the triad and the soul, if we make distinctions. God is love, and God is a consuming fire. Well, this, the, you know, you kind of wonder whether the heart center in the cosmic ethers of the solar logos is not found on the second subplane, which is the same as the monad. You kind of wonder whether, you know, monads are part of the central spiritual sun, but they are also related to the heart of the sun or to the soul nature of our solar logos. So the, let's just say, all monads have both ray 1 and ray 2 significances. So, when we are fully monadically conscious, we can know something about the solar logos, and therefore we know something about the energy which translates as or shows itself as love. God is love, and God is a consuming fire. The monad is a consuming fire. DK has talked about this. The monad is a consuming fire and works upon the personality as if through a, and DK calls it a burning glass, and we call it a magnifying glass. This fire, energized by love, has burnt out all personality qualities, leaving only a purified instrument, colored by the soul ray and no longer necessitating the existence of a soul body. At what stage is this? This fire energized by love has burnt out all personality qualities. Well, can this occur before the presentation of a Maya Virupa? Perhaps we can have monad, triad, and purified soul-infused personality. I think we can, when can we have that? Well, we can have that at the fourth degree. But then the question arises, what will the lower instrument of expression be? Will it be surviving from the incarnation in which the fourth degree was taken, or will it be projected through Kriya Shakti, working from above as a monad triad? A monad triad can project a Maya Virupa, or if one survives physically, if one survives physically the fourth initiation, then one can be monad, spiritual triad, a soul-infused personality. The personality has by this time completely absorbed the soul. That's what we mean by soul-infused. Or to put it perhaps more accurately, both soul and personality have been fused and blended into one instrument for the use of the one life. I mean, if we read Master DK carefully, we will see that there are so many ways in which he describes what is happening, so that even if we don't get the full picture from one description, we will have it an ever enlarging picture when combining the various descriptions. Soul and personality have been fused and blended into one instrument. So this is another kind of definition. DFT. Oh, that's so definite. Oh, come on. You know, I'm getting a little stubborn here. Let's just see how the word definition is. Definition. D-F-N. D-F-N. Definition of the soul-infused personality. Okay. This is but a picture or a symbolic use of words, meaning we cannot speak of things in their true nature, the true scientific nature. We just have to use certain words which suggest relationships, but suggest these relationships well enough to be reasonably accurate. This is but a picture or a symbolic use of words in order to express the unifying goal of material and spiritual evolution as it is carried to its conclusion for this world cycle. And by that we might mean round or man Antara, or world period, through the development of the three aspects of mind upon the mental plane. So abstract mind, son of mind, and a concrete mind, and from one perspective at least, these are the three minds which unite. There are other perspectives uniting different centers, including the so-called universal mind on the atmic plane. The cosmic implications will not be lost to you. Is he sure? we can carry them onto the cosmic mental plane, the abstract mind of the solar logos, the subtle mind of the solar logos, and the concrete mind of the solar logos. But it profits us not to dwell upon them. They are there, but we have certain things to handle in our immediate scope of possibility. As this process is carried forward, three great aspects of divine manifestation emerge upon the theater of world life. And this is how a master sees it, you know. It's a great drama, in a way. And on the physical plane, they are humanity, hierarchy, and Shambhala, and I think we can relate them to the different aspects of mind. We can relate these to the different aspects of mind, so abstract mind to Shambhala, son of mind to hierarchy, and concrete mind to humanity. Fairly obvious there. Okay, humanity is already the dominant kingdom in nature, at least on our planet. The fact of the hierarchy and of its imminent approach into physical appearance is becoming well known to hundreds of thousands of people today. Well, there are billions, but now, 70 years later, to even more, its recognized appearance will later set the stage for the needed preparatory phases, which will finally lead to the exoteric rule of the Lord of the World. Well, we might say, you know, Sanat Kumara much closer than he now is. Emerging from his aeonial seclusion, seclusion for a certain cycle, we might call it that, seclusion for a certain cycle, whatever that cycle is, in Shambhala, and coming forth into outer expression at the end of this world cycle, and, what can we say, and perhaps only etherically. Maybe by that time, much of what we call dense physical matter would have been so etherealized that it no longer exists as density. Here is the vast and necessary picture presented in order to give reason and power to the next stage of human evolution, you know, how it fits, in the larger and impending developments. Right now, it's the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ, but the time will come in whatever round, whether it's a chain round or later a larger scheme round, when Sanat Kumara will appear. Maybe it will have to be chain round because Sanat Kumara is particularly focused at this time in the fourth chain with its rounds. So, and it will have to be, I suspect, on our fourth globe because that's where he is focused, and that fourth globe can represent kind of an etheric base for all of the different chains and their globes. But that is another matter. Well, okay, this will be the end of Ray's Initiation Webinar Commentary, Program 29, and I always go looking for the page numbers, and probably, okay, it's page 462. We're doing about 3 pages per hour program. Pages 459 to 462, and we'll have the beginning of Ray's Initiation Webinar Commentary, Program 30, pages 462 to something, you know, usually about three pages or so. Well, it's, I don't know, you know, I'm in awe of every sentence that the Tibetan is writing here, and, you know, how he's pointing to these various factors in our energy system which are not well known to us as they are well known to him. But we have to take his word for it that they do exist, and when we are demonstrating in our mind various capacities, we have to realize they are coming from centers which he has identified within the mental field. So all of this is this particular section we've been dealing with is about the story of three minds uniting and how they represent the different aspects of, well, different, maybe, well, different aspects of divinity, They are, or maybe I should say they are merely distinct. Because they all become interrelated. You know, we do take things apart in an analytical way only to put them back together as one thing in a field of unity. So all the distinctive factors become unified and parts of each other. All right, friends, I think that will have to do it for the moment. So we will come back with program number 30. I always hate to leave the paragraphs. They just are so full, and it's just quite impossible to expand upon them in a way which truly captures what is intended to be said. But he has given us a real picture of union here. And a great absorption into that which is not transient, as is the concrete mind or eternal, such as the Son of Mine, but which is related to essence itself, boundless and unknown, and therefore related to the Absolute. The essence of the monad is really the ray of the Absolute in a very attenuated, self-reflected form. All right, well, I don't want to go on dilating. So we will see you shortly. All the best. Okay. Bye-bye.